Welcome to Brad Golf Podcast, a podcast for the average golfer. My name is Dermot Bradfield and golf is in my blood. Join me as I fumble my way around this fascinating sport.
Welcome back, everyone. It's the 11th of November 2020. This is the 25th episode of the Brad Golf Podcast series. This week, we're going to recap on the Houston Open. We'll look at Nigel's picks for US Masters, and we'll discuss current events on the PGA Tour and back at home. Now, to be fair, this week, most of the emphasis is going to be on the up-and-coming Masters. As usual, please do subscribe to the podcast. You'll find Brad Golf TV on Anchor, Google, Apple, Spotify, and other podcast platforms. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. You'll find Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and you'll find bradgolf.ie on Facebook. You can also contact us at bradgolftv@gmail.com. If you have any queries, observations, or comments, we'd love to hear from you. So let's get this party started. Hello, Nigel, and welcome. It's Masters week. I presume you're struggling to get to sleep at the moment.
I know. It's like a kid at Christmas. Fantastic. You finally arrived.
A couple of months late, but we're looking forward to it. This is the first Masters played at this time of year, November, and one of the latest majors that has ever been played. I think there's only four or five majors in the history of golf that have been played this late in the year.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So before we go into the Masters, which is obviously the highlight of the week, let's do a quick recap on Houston Open. And to start off with, we have the winner. So Mexico's Carlos Ortiz, he held off DJ and Hideki by closing with a 5-under 65 to win. Great result for him, considering the two beasts that were battling him for that title.
Yeah, it was a great victory for him. I was delighted for him. You could see it meant a lot. He was welling up at the end there. He's kind of come close a couple of times, and he's got a lot of game. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's got a lot of game, and he finally showed it. He showed a lot of bottle as well, and he finished it off well on 18. He only needed two putts to win the title, but he rolled in a 25 footer just to do it in style. So I was happy for him. On the flip side, he was playing with Sam Burns, who was one of our picks from last week. And Sam Burns had the 36 hole lead and the 54 hole lead, but had a very poor Sunday and only just about got us a partial each way. So I was really disappointed in Sammy. His putting stats were terrible because he actually hit a lot of greens. But he was negative, I think, a shot and a half for both Saturday and Sunday on the greens. So
72 on the final day rarely does it when you've the lead. And still, he got us a few bob, nearly balanced the books for us with a T7. So it wasn't a bad.
A full each way would have really balanced the books. But sure, you can't win them all.
You can't win them all. But like he gave us, again, your picks gave us entertainment. I mean, having a leader going in after 54 is always a great way to be going into the weekend. You have a bit of money that you, will I cash out? Will I stay in? So it's great when people have that kind of dilemma. You know your picks are working when that's the case. So well done.
Yeah, I guess so.
For form then, so for looking at, I suppose, players coming into a bit of form, so Hideki and DJ and Brooks in particular jumped out there with Hideki finishing with a final round 63 and the lads DJ and Brooksy finishing with 65s, both of them ominous kind of form there. From
indeed,
three,
ominous, yes.
Yeah, from three, you know, three favourites for the Masters, three of the favourites. So what did you think of their form? Or is it relevant really on a...
I think it is relevant. I think you'll see its relevance later on. I think the course as well needs to get a lot of praise. I think for a $40 public course, municipal course, I think it really gave a great test to the top pros. Doesn't have a lot of kind of flashy kind of flourishes to it. There's no crazy bunkers or unusual kind of features on the course. It's just a straightforward, well-designed golf course. And it's got tricky, very slopey greens. And I think that's going to be a good prep for next week.
From an Irish interest point of view, Shane Lowry was solid, consistent and solid. T11, he's 69, 69, 68, 68. I'm sure that will give him confidence going into the Masters as well.
Yeah, good performance. Yeah. Very unlike Shane. It was very solid, very consistent every day. Possibly could have snuck into the top 10 if he was putting a little better, but yeah, great prep for this week.
Yeah, I think he'll be
confident. I think Harrington did quite well as well.
That's right, yeah.
He continues to, you know, confound doubters about whether he's too old for this. He's still playing very good golf.
Moving on from Houston, the main topic today, naturally, is the Masters. The Masters is fast approaching. Some big news, obviously the biggest news coming out of Augusta is that Sergio is not going to be competing. So he was at Houston on his flight back, or after his flight back, he had a cough, bit of a sore throat going on. So he took the test, himself and his wife took the test. His wife came back negative, he came back positive. So for COVID, so he's out of the US Masters. Obviously, huge disappointment for him. His form had been pretty good of late as well. He's obviously going to be gutted not to be able to play in Augusta.
Yeah, it's not great to have one of the former champions miss out at the very last minute. Yeah, I was kind of expecting that we would have a couple of people who would miss out. We've obviously, Joachim Niemann is also in the same predicament. Obviously, he got his test earlier in the week and that proved positive. It's still kind of, it's unfortunate for Sergio, but at least he has a green jacket.
Yes,
so
exactly. Yeah.
He can at least console himself with that. He's in good form though, you know, and it's clearly a course he loves. He's a great ball striker. His putting isn't great, so I wasn't really, you know, putting much faith in him in repeating what he did in 2017. That year his putting came around, and that's what ultimately won it for him.
The Irish in the field, so we have four Irish in the field this year, which I'm about to say, is it a record? But it's definitely quite high from Irish participation. So we've Rory, who has to be said, now I've been watching the Sky Sports coverage, and there's a term that they're using over and over and over and over again, but it's under the radar, Rory. For many, I suppose, he's not being talked about. Bryson's being talked about. And also the fact that because there isn't, patrons are not going to be there, is that, you know, his chance to win the Grand Slam is kind of a little bit hidden from what would normally be the case in the build-up to a Masters. So very much under the radar, Rory. I'll come back to him in a moment. We've got G-Mac, we've got Shane Lowry, and from Cork, we've got James Shugrue, who's representing in the amateur stakes. I'm not sure if we've had that many in a field before. What do you reckon? Do you reckon we've had four before?
We probably have, although I'm not certain of it.
There might have been a year with Padraig Harrington, G-Mac.
Harrington would have been in it.
And Rory, maybe.
If not sure, actually. You might be right. It might be the biggest contingent we've ever had.
Yeah, well, we'll put it out there. But tell me, Rory, so firstly, under the radar, could this be, like, considering that 2 weeks ago we talked about his 29 birdies and the fact that he had, you know, it was three doubles, his consistency is an issue, but could this be the year? Could being under the radar make it all the more likely that he could do it? What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's got a great chance. I don't think he's under the radar, really.
Well, more under the radar than maybe last year, let's say, for example, 2019, all the talk leading
up. Yeah, I think there's probably less talk about, you know, the career Grand Slam, et cetera, et cetera. I would say, though, he's probably in not the best form coming in.
Yeah.
And I think he, like, from a betting perspective, I think he's still very short.
Yeah.
Like, I can see an 11 to 1 about him. I've seen 10 to 1s other places. It's, yeah. He's got a great chance, but that's a skinny price.
Yeah. Like, as an Irish person, I think if you're to put money on Rory, it's the Grand Slam you're kind of, you want to be part of. You want to be able to enjoy it even more, having a few bob on him. But yeah. I think it's more of a nostalgic bet than a clinical mathematical one, I'll put it that way.
Listen, there's no doubt in the talent he has. He's definitely got the driving. It's going to be a softer course this year. It may play a bit like the time he won in Congressional, mm-hmm. when he won his US Open on his first major. But I still don't know about his irons. His wedge play is still inconsistent. Putting has improved, but has improved enough. Yes, he's got what it takes, but it's the same old thing with Rory. Does he have it? Can he reproduce it when he really needs it?
And he needs a strong start, doesn't he? I mean, that's been his problem in many of the majors, is that he's usually either scrambling to make the cut on day two or...
Yes, he comes slow out of the blocks.
Yeah.
I think Shane is a better bet.
Yeah, so Shane's form is good. And last year, he had a really strong start here. I think he was in second or third place, tied second or third after the first round. So he has form here as well. So yeah, he could be a very interesting one. Did you see who he got paired with? Shane Lowry.
Oh, is he with Tiger?
He is indeed, yeah. So that at least there isn't crowds, so you don't have the same kind of pressure that would have been there. So he it's not the same as being with Tiger in previous years, there's no doubt. But yeah, it'd be an interesting one himself, Shane, Tiger, and the amateur Andy Ogletree have been paired together. Yeah. So yeah, just out of the pairings then. So some pairings of interest that jumped out at me anyway. Adam Scott, Morikawa, and Tyrrell Hatton. It's one pairing that I think, the previous winner and Adam Scott, and two guys who have really good chance here, and reform players, Colin Morikawa and Tyrrell Hatton. I think that's a great pairing. JT, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and Brooksy. I mean, anytime you've got Brooksy in a group in Augusta, you've got to be thinking there's something going to happen. You've got DJ, Cantlay, and Rory, and you'd have to imagine if Rory can come out of that grouping on Friday ahead of DJ and Patrick Cantlay, you'd fancy his chances going into a weekend, because Cantlay did very well here last year. DJ obviously is on super form, world number one. You've got Ram, Bryson, and Louis. What do you think of Ram's chances?
Yeah, he's not the favorite, possibly deserves to be the favorite, mm-hmm. given what he's done this summer. Obviously, he didn't win the FedEx, but he's won some big tournaments. Did you see what he did today? He had a hole in one on the fourth.
The fourth, that's right.
He had that's a seriously difficult par three. 200 yards, and it wasn't an easy pin position, and he had a hole in one there. Then on the 16th, they were doing this kind of tradition of skipping the balls over the lake, and he skipped the ball. He had this low shooter, skipped over the lake, went up onto the green, and it had the pin in the kind of Sunday position where it's down at the bottom of the hill. I went up the hill around, did the whole looper off the slope, and wandered down into the hole. It was incredible. His hole in one at the fourth is probably actually more impressive because it's a more difficult hole.
Yeah, he was hoping to get some video coverage. I think some of the guys ahead of him had their cameras out, and he was waiting to get the coverage so he could share it on social media. Yeah. So one to watch is Ram. Obviously, being out with Bryson, that's a really interesting grouping as well. No offense to Louis Oosthuizen. Then we've got Tiger, Shane, and the amateur Andy Ogletree, as we said. We've G-Mac. Is out with Siwoo Kim and Nate Lashley. Bubba is out with Wolf and Fleetwood. Bubba, I suppose, is one that is coming into form at the right time again, and could be a contender here. Fleetwood also. And finally, the final grouping of interest, particularly from an Irish point of view, is Jose Maria Olazabal, Andrew Putnam, and James Sugru. Nice for him to be able to play with Jose Maria, historical victories there from Jose. And I'm sure that would be a nice one for him to bank away there in the memory banks.
Well, I hope he makes the cut. That's the whole thing.
It would be just,
I'd
say he'd snap your hand off now for that. Being able to play there the full weekend would be immense for the guy. So fingers crossed he can do that. Okay. We're going to move into a bit of nostalgia here and a bit of question time, right? So in order to bring us through the history of the Masters, I put together a few questions for you. There's 30 points up for grabs. The last question actually has a lot of points in it because there's a lot of elements to it. So we're going to see what you score out of 30, Nigel. Are you ready for this?
Born ready.
Born ready. So there was no prep given to Nigel for this. Some are easy, some are less easy. But Nigel, I'm going to put a time limit on you in answering the questions. And I would like our listeners to play along and try and see how you perform against these questions. And if you can use social media or other to tell us what score you came out with in a live event, no Google. So here we go. So question one. Prior to 1939, oh my God, you're going back that far. Prior to 1939, what was the US Masters called? Question one.
Jesus.
Tough one to start with.
I don't know.
Okay, it was originally called the Augusta National Invitational Tournament. There you go. Horrible question to start with, but we're off. We're up and running. Okay, next one. I think you'll get this one. What year did Jack Nicklaus win his last green jacket?
86.
Correct. Well done. In the 1997 Masters, Tiger Woods set the tournament scoring record at the time. The question is, what did Tiger score or shoot on the front nine of his first round?
He started off with a 40.
Oh, very good. That's right. He was playing with Nick Faldo. He couldn't hit the ball out of his way for the first nine holes. Yeah, very good.
He went out in 40 and came back in 30.
As you do. As you do. Okay.
Just like around and down about.
Absolutely. Right. On what hole did Gene Sarazen make his famous double eagle? This is question four.
The shot that was heard all around the world was on the 15th.
That's correct. Three out of four so far, Nigel. Hanging in there. Question five. It was 1961 before the first non-American won the green jacket. Who was he?
1961?
Mm-hmm.
Gary Player?
Correct. That was close, Nigel. You nearly tripped up there. We'll give it to you. It's Gary Player. Where's he from? That's not worth any points, but tell us where he's from, just for any of our viewers who don't know Gary Player.
He's from South Africa.
South Africa, indeed. Yeah, very good. Question six. Who has the lowest stroke average around Augusta? So score to par. And I can give you a tiny clue if you like. And I'll take no points off.
Go on.
Okay, so it's only from six appearances. That's all I can give you.
Six appearances?
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Spieth.
Oh, excellent. Well done. Yeah, that should have been worth 2 points because that was a difficult question. Yeah, minus 44, Jordan Spieth. Well done. Next. So this question is worth 3 points because there's three players. I think it's an easy one, but they get harder. So which players have won back-to-back US Masters? 3 points. Three players.
How many players?
Three players.
Well, Tiger.
Yep.
Faldo.
Yep.
And Arnold Palmer.
Oh, no. It was the other one. So who would have been your other pick?
Jack Nicklaus.
Correct. Yes, Jack Nicklaus.
Jack Nicklaus.
So you get two out of three there. So far, just to count them up here, six, seven, eight, nine. You've two wrong, so you're now currently 7 out of 9. Okay, doing well, doing well. Next up.
I thought Nicklaus's Masters victories were more spaced out, but obviously not.
Yep, unlucky. Okay, so very topical one, this one. So who was the first black golfer to play in the Masters?
Lee Elder.
Lee Elder. So have you heard, this isn't a question now, but this is just a bit of a news item. So did you hear the news about Lee Elder, Nigel, this week?
Yeah, he's going to be an honorary starter in April next
year.
Correct,
yeah.
So that's good news.
Yeah, and Payne University, which is a very close by university, they're setting up a fund there for the golfers at the university for both women and men. So a very significant fund that they're setting up there at Payne University in his name as well, which is fantastic to see. Okay, great. So far, just a loss of 2 points. Nigel, doing well. So that was Lee Elder. Yeah. Next question. Who will miss their first major since 1999? First major, and I'm not talking Masters. I'm talking first major since 1999 by not playing this weekend.
Sergio Garcia.
Sergio, yeah. Quite an incredible run. It was the longest run of consecutive majors ongoing. So unfortunately, that's been lost thanks to COVID. Yeah, poor Sergio. Okay, next. You're still, as I would say, two over par at the moment, Nigel. Two wrong. Next up, the first left-handed golfer to become US Masters champion did so in 2003. Who was he?
Mike Weir.
Oh, very good. Because that was a tricky one. I think some of our viewers are going to get that one wrong, aren't they? Who are they going to say instead?
Mickelson, I assume, or yeah. Bubba.
Yeah, Mickelson is probably what many people would say here. So well done on scoring that one. I thought that one would trip you up, but you've gotten safely out of off the tee box there. Yeah. Next. What was unique? Now, this is tough. What was unique about the first Masters that Jack Nicklaus won in 1963? I should nearly have bonus marks for this because it's this is tough.
What was unique about it?
Yep.
It's the first guy you ever won in his debut?
Nope, good try. Actually, he didn't get a green jacket. So the green jackets were first issued in 1949 every year, except in 1963. Jack, because he's a big guy, they couldn't get a jacket to fit Jack Nicklaus when he won.
Fat Jack.
It took 20 years for them to actually get him a jacket for that win. So that's what was unique about Jack's win in 1963. Okay, you're three over par. We've got the last question, and this question is made up of multiple parts. So I want you to name all the countries from which winners have come from to win US Masters. Each country is worth...
What?
Yeah, so for example, Ireland have no winners. So Ireland is not one of the countries in which there's a winner from because we don't have a winner. Not yet. Shane Lowry is going to win this year, obviously. But I want you to name all the countries that have had a winner at the US Masters. Each country is worth 1 point, except for those countries who've only won it once. Those countries are worth 2 points. Okay, so for example, if Ireland had only won it once and you named Ireland, you get 2 points. I'll give you one as a bonus here. The United States have won it 61 times. So obviously that's worth 1 point. So name the countries.
All right, US.
US, okay.
South Africa.
South Africa, correct.
Australia. Adam Scott.
So very good. So that's a two-pointer straight away. He's won it. Yes, correct. So that's a two-pointer. Well done.
Spain.
Yeah, 1 point. They've won it 5 times.
Scotland,
very good. One win. Who was it?
Sandy Lyle.
Well done, yep.
Wales.
Oh, very good. Often forgotten. People think it's England, right? So that was our Woozy, of course. Yeah, very good.
That gave me 2 points.
2 points. Back at the net.
England.
England, 4 winners. Yeah. Can you name them?
4 winners.
Well, four times, two winners, I should say.
It's Faldo and Danny Willett.
Correct. You've one 1-pointer left, and then you've 3 2-pointers left.
We've got Argentina.
Correct. Yeah. Very good. Who was that winner? Can you remember?
It's Angel Cabrera.
Angel, correct, yeah.
The Canada.
Canada, correct. You mentioned him earlier.
Mike Weir.
That's it, our lefty.
And I've got another 1-pointer, have I?
Oh, you do. And you've a 2-pointer left.
Let me see.
It's a tricky one. It's a very tricky one. Naturally.
It's Germany.
Yes. Yeah. Well done. So we've one winner from Germany, but he won it twice.
Bernard Langer or Barry Manilow.
As our core people like to call him, Langer. Yeah. He got in there. So you have one left. Nigel's worth 2 points. I'm going to have to put a time limit on this now.
Hold on a second.
So you've got, I'm going to give you 20 seconds starting now.
Vijay Singh.
Oh.
Fiji.
Fiji. Well done. Well done. Yeah, it was a perfect score there at the end. So 3 over par. That's 27 out of 30. I'm going to give you for that. Well done on getting our country.
90%, yeah.
27 out of 30 is, yeah, exactly. It's 90%. Well done. It's acceptable.
Acceptable only. It's
just acceptable. Yeah. Great. So that leads us into Nigel's picks. But actually, before I go there, Nigel, do you have any Masters traditions at your house when it comes to watching and observing the Masters? Is there anything that you do that you wouldn't do for, let's say, the Houston Open or things like that? Do you have any kind of traditions?
No, I think if I did have any little quirk or little custom, I think I've watched so much golf over the last few years.
Yeah.
That any little quirk or custom is probably gone.
It's probably gone. Well, I do have one and I'm prepared for it. So since I was a kid, obviously this is the one I was allowed to stay up for. I would often remember the Sunday nights, particularly if they went to playoffs and things like that, that there used to be I had to do a bit of bartering to be allowed to stay up, particularly with school coming up the next day and things like that. My tradition always was when I was a kid, I got a bar of Dairy Milk chocolate, a packet of cheese and onion Tato's that I could have during the TV coverage. So I'm ready. I've got my 4 bars of chocolate right here beside me. And I've got my 4 packets of cheese and onion Tato crisps ready to go for the US Masters this weekend. Very, very exciting, Nigel. Very, very exciting.
Could be good. Yeah. Nice tradition.
Yep. Okay. Right. Let's move on. Nigel, your picks for the biggest event of the year from a golfing perspective. Talk us through.
Okay. Let's do this. Well, It's not easy to pick a winner this year because the Masters tournament can be sometimes one of the easier tournaments to get a winner in. I've got the winner in a couple of times. Most recently, obviously, Patrick Reed was a couple of years ago was my very enjoyable winner at 45-1. I think he was a lot of money on that. I was happy.
Such a nice guy as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's such a gentleman. And the rousing reception he got when he won it. I think it was polite applause. But the trends that normally hold when we have an April Masters may not hold again this year. What I'm talking about trends is stuff like debutantes winning. Not are debutantes generally not winning on their first go. It's over 40 years since Fuzzy Zeller won his first Masters. Most winners have come from the top 30 in the world. The number one in the world generally doesn't win. It hasn't won since Tiger Woods in 2002. Stuff like that may all go out the window. Even stuff about having to be a bomber to win it on this new lengthened Augusta track. It's lengthened again this year. The fifth hole is over 500 yards. So it's a one-off. There's no fans. There's no par three competition to hex you if you win it. It's a lot of things could go out the window. So this year I've kind of focused on guys who've got a bit of form coming into it, who have some previous Augusta form, and who also play well in kind of late in the year, specifically in November. And really taking all this into consideration, you know, we have got possible rain in the forecast. We've got a guy like Bryson DeChambeau who seems to be garnering all the headlines about how far he's going to hit it. I think that's going to ultimately be to his detriment.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it, Nigel. Nothing more.
I think he's going to go well, but he won the US Open back in September and he came a little bit, I wouldn't say under the radar, but definitely there was a lot less expectation on him. He got a strategy spot on against a lot of the advice and expectations of most people and needs to be applauded for that. But I think the expectation and the assumption that his big hitting is going to do the business this week is well overstated and overestimated.
Yeah.
And for this reason, this week's selection is going to be Brooks Koepka as the main headline selection. 16 to 1, 3 points each way.
It's a good price, Brooks, isn't it?
Well, that's it. The price is unbelievable, considering he's a four-time major champion. He only won his last major just over a year and a half ago.
That's a ridiculous
price. Yeah. The guy's had injury problems this year with knee surgery, and that affected his hip. He has been erratic in form. He's only put in a couple of really eye-catching performances, but that one of the best performances he put on this year was last week at the Houston Open. Back-to-back 65s in the weekend on a tough course with undulating greens. I thought, as I said earlier in the pod, this was great preparation for Augusta. He hit the ball well. He experimented with a new driver on Thursday, which actually probably cost him the tournament. He's back to his best. As he's done many times before, he's tried to get his game to peak for the majors, and I think he's in a good spot. 16 to 1 is, you know, there's a bit of juice in that price.
There is.
And another factor is, I've mentioned this is a kind of a biorhythms or a kind of a time of the year when certain players play well. Brooks has won three times in November, albeit there weren't as big tournaments as this, but he won twice. He won the Dunlop Phoenix in Japan twice in November. He won the Turkish Airlines Open. This is back in 2014. But he's shown that he goes well later in the year. And I think this is going to be a factor going into this tournament. Because you see other players who play well, you know, in the early part of the year, and then you don't hear about them again. For the rest, I think Brooks comes good in November. And I think at that price, he has to be taken.
I agree.
So the second selection is the guy who also played well last week, Newson. Had a fantastic 63 on Sunday. It's Hideki Matsuyama. Japan's number one player for a number of years now. He's been fifth and tied seventh before in Augusta. He's, as we saw last week, his game is back. And it's not just, you know, fantastic ball striking, which we've become, you know, accustomed to from Hideki. His putting is back. His putting has always been the weak link of his game, but he looked very comfortable on the greens last week. He looked up for it. The body language is really good. His price is a little bit mean. 22 to 1 could be a bit better, but, you know, if he wins, I'll be happy. Goes well in November. He's three wins in the Japan Tour in November. He won the WGC in Shanghai at the end of October a couple of years ago, and he won the Hero World Golf Challenge Tiger Tournament in early December. Goes well at this time of year, has got Augusta form and current form. He's worth a shot. 22 to 1, 2.5 points each way. Hideki Matsuyama.
He could be next the first selection. Asian. He could be the first Asian victor. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Huge, wouldn't it?
That would be a great story.
Yeah.
Tommy Fleetwood is our third selection. Good old Tommy has been a bit up and down since the golf turned after the pandemic. Lockdown the first time. His game, he took a while to come back. He didn't really come back to the States straight away. Didn't look great initially, and then went back to Europe before the US Open. Was third in Portugal. Just missed out in the playoff for the Scottish Open. Now his putting was a little bit hit and miss in that, but his ball striking was unbelievable. He's got major experiences, two runners up, one in the Open to Shane and another one to Brooksy in the US Open, Shinnecock. He's played well in November before. Last year in November, he won the Nedbank Golf Challenge in South Africa. I think his game is starting to build nicely, as we saw at the Scottish Open. He has not really much Augusta experience. His best performance is tied 17th 2 years ago. So there's a little bit of, you know, faith and kind of hope in this selection. but 40-1 on Tommy Fleetwood when he's been a lot shorter in previous majors. I think this is a little bit of a value play as well. So we're going to go 1.5 points each way on Tommy 40-1.
It's the next step in his career, really, isn't it? This is what he needs. He needs a major now to just kind of rubber stamp his career.
And you see players who have done well in the, like, he had a fantastic Ryder Cup 2 years ago. And there's been trends before from both America and the European side of players who've done well in the Ryder Cup and then gone on, used that as a springboard for major championships. I think Tommy is one of those players, and I'm hoping it's going to be this week.
He'd be a popular winner, yeah.
Now we're getting more into the long shots now in our next selections. Our next selection is Sebastian Munoz. He's at 125-1. We're going 3/4 of a point each way. This would be a first Masters for a Colombian player. A little bit of a hopeful pick. It is his debut at the Masters, but he finished 8th in the Tour Championship in the run-up for the FedEx Cup. He carried this form into the new season. He was top 10 at the CJ Cup. He was just outside the top 10 in another event. Since then, last week, Carlos Ortiz won the Houston Open, as we mentioned before, but both Sebastian Munoz and Carlos Ortiz were teammates in college in the University of North Texas. He knows Carlos very well, obviously, and I think he's going to be inspired by that to produce a very good performance at Augusta this week. So we're going 125-1, 3/4 of a point each way. And the last selection at 200-1, half a point each way, is Christian Bezuidenhout, the South African player. He only got into the top 50 last year, which earned him his Masters berth. You know, he's only risen to the top of the game recently, but he's shown in his PGA Tour appearances, I think he's got about 8 or 9 in the last year or so, that he is comfortable playing over here. He's got a top 20 at the Arnold Palmer. You know, he is reasonably comfortable over here, but one of the main reasons I picked him was he lost out in the playoff in the Dubai Desert Classic to Lucas Herbert. And the Dubai Desert Classic is one of those tournaments that is a bit of a form pointer to Augusta. Because when Danny Willett and Sergio Garcia won their respective Masters, they also won the Dubai Desert Classic that same year, only a couple of months beforehand. So we're going to take those two course links and bring them forward and pick Christian Bezuidenhout as our outsider at 200-1.5 points each way.
Excellent.
So as to recap, we're going Brooks as the main selection, 16-1, 3 points each way. Hideki, 22-1, 2.5 points each way. Tommy Fleetwood, 40-1, 1.5 points each way. Sebastian Munoz, 125-1, 3/4 of a point each way. And Christian Bezuidenhout, 200-1.5 points each way. They are the Masters picks. What I would encourage people is, because this is a different Masters tournament, being in November, there may be some good bets in running that you wouldn't have expected. So keep an eye on that. We may have on trickydogleg.com, where we will have all the information on Masters tips, we may put up a 36-hole or tips from 30 after the cut on Friday evening. So keep an eye on that.
Nigel, there was 3 guys that didn't appear in your picks. We haven't mentioned 2 of them at all. One we barely touched on, and considering he's a defending champion, we didn't give him a huge amount of discussion time. So I'd just like to talk about these 3 old-timers, right? And tell me what you think about their chances this weekend. So we've got Westy, Lee Westwood. Obviously, he's got history at the club. He has plenty of top 10s here. And
he was runner-up in 2010 to Mickelson.
Yeah. So what do you think of Westy's chances now that he's got back into the Masters? Obviously, he's not 25 or anything, but for an each-way bet, is he someone worth looking at?
Yeah, I think he'd be an interest in each way. I just don't think his current form, like, he didn't do great last week in Houston. He loves playing at Augusta. So he's going to raise his game for it, and he's an unbelievable ball striker. At his age, I don't think he's probably as long as he used to be, and it is going to be a bit of a struggle. He's always been an iffy, streaky putter.
Yeah.
His chipping action is always, I mean, the thing you love about Westy is he just hits absolute laser straight irons and is very consistent, like ultra consistent off the tee. Gives himself lots of chances on the greens, but misses a lot. That's the problem.
That's the problem. Yeah. It would be some story, wouldn't it? I mean,
I would love to see him win it, really. I could see, I wouldn't put off people putting him down for a top 10 finish.
Next up then on the old timers, Philly Mick, has his time passed him by, or could he be in each way?
Again, I'm a big fan of Phil's, but you know he's won twice in the Champions Tour, and then you think that would have given him confidence going back in the main tour, and he hasn't really, you know, featured. He's been all over the place, really. He's talked about bringing in a set 47.5-inch driver, you know, talking along the lines of Bryson, only he's over 20 years older, and it just sounds crazy talk. You never know. He loves play again, you know, 3 times champion, loves playing in Augusta, could easily turn on the form and get a top 10 finish. I don't think he can win it. His form is not even good enough to really be confident of him making the cut.
Yeah.
But I think he can, like, but...
But if you had money on the table, you'd be putting it in Westy before you'd be putting in Philly Mick.
Yeah, and, you know, I wouldn't put off people back in Philly to miss the cut as well.
Yeah. And finally, then, of the old-timers that would have pedigree here, is our defending champion. So, obviously... His swing speed is an issue at the moment. He's lost a lot of speed from last year. This is not the same Tiger that came to Augusta, came last year. So what do you fancy of his chances as defending champion?
I wouldn't be confident, and I wouldn't be encouraging anyone to back him. I think he'll make the cut, but that's about it, really.
Yeah.
He's had very few, you know, competitive runouts when he had the last time, I think it was the Zozo, he was not very dynamic off the tee and actually poor on the greens as well. His putting, which has always been his, you know, his most devastating weapon, you know, wasn't great. Maybe it was just the fact that he started badly and then lost interest or whatever and was just, you know, throwing things out or whatever, but I just don't think he's got enough competitive play or any form at all to talk about that. He knows Augusta by like the back of his hand, and he can manage his game around to make the cut and possibly be on the edge of contention at best, but that's all I can say. I think he'll make the cut.
Well,
harsh fucking kind of consideration on those three legends, but what can you do? You asked me a question.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what we want. We don't want you to sugarcoat it. There's serious money on the line here, you know. So we'll be in touch over the weekend, Nigel. As we watch the final stretches. Important message, and you gave it last week, but it's important to remind people that Sunday, they're starting early, aren't they, Nigel?
Yeah. I think this is in order to not clash with NFL, which seems to be more popular for some reason over in America than golf. I don't know why.
Okay.
Although I do watch it myself.
Yeah.
They're going early on Sunday. It'll be 2 o'clock our time. I think they're teeing off 9 o'clock local time in Augusta. They're aiming to finish early in order to not clash with the NFL games. So get yourself on the couch early doors.
Yeah, fantastic. So yeah, we'll be, I think, is it 8:30 in the evening they're talking about Green Jacket? I think that's the time that Sky Sports gave, around 8:30. I could be corrected on that. Right. Well, thanks again, Nigel. Appreciate you joining us, as always.
Yeah. Enjoy the Masters, everyone.
Yeah, enjoy the Masters, folks. And we'll see you in a week's time.
Cool. Talk to you.
Bye-bye.
So just to confirm, this podcast is not sponsored in any way. All views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever with which I have been, am now, or will be affiliated. Please do subscribe to the podcast, Brad Golf TV. You'll find me on Spotify, Pocket Casts, Google, etc., etc. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. It's Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. On Facebook, you'll find me at bradgolf.ie. And you can also drop me an email at bradgolftv@gmail.com. Looking forward to hearing from you in the weeks and months ahead. You've been listening to Brad Golf Podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please do come back soon and join me for another round.